Christopher Media. Eminem, question everything.
That's my mama.
That's my mama. That's my purse.
I don't know you.
You don't know. You're the first one that's ever got that. I say it all the time. Brianna's like, what?
King of the Hill references.
Yeah, King of the Hill.
You won't find those on any other podcast.
Eminem, question everything. On iTunes and ChristopherMedia.net. Christopher Media. Let's make some noise.
We got a box of coffee from Starbucks. We got the mayonnaise sandwiches coming down a little later.
Christopher Media. Let's make some noise. From Asmacore Studios near Detroit, Michigan, it's Unregimented.
Gangsters, what's up, guys?
Next week, we'll just do our podcast from Starbucks. Really? Splenda? Gross.
You brought the shit.
No, they just packed it with all this shit. There's actual sugar in there, too, if you want it. I can't do that Nutrasweet shit.
Okay,
aspartame is like the worst tasting shit in the world.
Okay, you said tasting.
Yeah.
I want to get off. I want to, because I don't know shit about that, because I don't give a fuck about my health, obviously. But is it, why, what is the big deal with aspartame? Because I keep, like, people are like, oh my God, I'm addicted to it. If I don't have my Diet Coke, I start getting headaches and the shakes. And I'm like, yeah, because you're fucking drinking 2 liters of Diet Coke a day. You're fucking, your body's become acclimated to the caffeine it's getting. You take it away.
Yeah.
That's why, no, it's the aspartame, man.
I don't think so.
And I'm like, I've never heard that. I've heard
the caffeine, man.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Because it's just, I've heard, you know, it might give you cancer or whatever, you know, all the scare tactics. Sweet and low was going to do it to you.
It's all aspartame. It's all, or some version of that.
Okay.
It's all basically, it's artificial sweetener. No, there's no evidence that any kind of artificial sweetener has caused anybody any harm. Right. It just tastes like crushed up aspirin in your drink.
It tastes like a bag of smashed assholes. That's what it tastes like.
I love your metaphors. I don't know what an entire bag of smashed assholes tastes like.
I
had a bag of hot dogs once. So I don't know.
I literally cannot drink it. It's not like,
your body just
I can,
like, ugh.
I'll tough it out. Oh, it's all you got is diet. Oh, well. No, I'll just drink water.
Yeah.
Which I don't do that often.
I
need sugar, goddammit.
Hey, thank you for listening, liking, and sharing Unregimented on Facebook, following us on Twitter at Unregimented Pod. You could subscribe to Unregimented on iTunes for free by clicking through the iTunes banner on ChristopherMedia.net. Android users, you're covered as well. You can find this show on Stitcher Radio. We also have the player right on the site there. You can now listen to a new episode of a Christopher Media show every day of the week. On Sundays, you got Eminem Question Everything. Mondays, of course, Unregimented. Tuesday, you get the Weed Podcast bonus nugget, and whenever Todd gets around to it, you get the Toddzilla X Pod. Wednesday, we got a new show. It's the Oddcast with Jenna and John. Thursday, your second dose of Unregimented for the week. Friday, you got the Weedsman Podcast. Saturday, another new show, The Captain's Table, for all you guys into nerd culture, we'll say. Your LARPing, your RPGs, video games, any kind of gaming, really. No one's going to cover it on The Captain's Table. So please check those out. They're all at ChristopherMedia.net. You can subscribe for free to all of them on iTunes, Stitcher as well. Hey, if you like what we do and you would like to show your support for us, you can donate to Christopher Media by using the PayPal button on ChristopherMedia.net. Please click through the Amazon banner on ChristopherMedia.net and bookmark the page. It won't cost you anything extra, and when you buy something, it will help to show your support for Christopher Media. If you're looking to launch your own website, please click through the HostGator banner at ChristopherMedia.net. That's who we use to host all of the Christopher Media shows. When you sign up for HostGator by clicking through our link, you are helping to support ChristopherMedia.net. DraftKings.com, daily fantasy sports leagues. No season-long commitment. You can enter free or paid contests and win your share of over $200 million in prizes. When you click through the DraftKings banner at ChristopherMedia.net, you will get a free first-time deposit bonus when you sign up for DraftKings.com.
By the way, I did see an op-ed article that I thought was pretty good. It attacked the Ebola people that are flipping out and the Ebola people?
Ebola.
The Christian, you know, right, who are like, there's no such thing as evolution. But yet these are the same people that are probably going to tell you that Ebola has evolved and became airborne.
Mm-hmm. No, it just
can't have it both ways.
It mutated, which people don't understand.
Have they learned to not use the word evolve and they've started using mutate? I see evolve all the time from these people.
I see more mutate, but mutation is part of evolution. It is one of the key factors of evolution. Mutations happen, and the negative ones don't reproduce, and the positive ones do. And that's evolution for you.
Don't tell them that. We'll get boycotted. By the way, have we gotten any hate mail yet?
No.
Fuck, we're doing something wrong.
Rousing rounds of indifference.
Yeah.
So far.
Yay. I guess we have to be more controversial. Go the Madonna route of marketing.
That's the problem.
Go the Madonna route of marketing. Create a false controversy for everyone to get up in arms about so everyone has an opinion about us. When it really doesn't matter one way or the other.
And there was much
the
rejoicing.
Unregimented photo book?
Oh, that would be ugly, sir.
I'm not putting my balls on a coffee table.
I ain't farting on no snare drum. Yeah, no.
It's like trying to give a mammogram to my nutsack.
Ooh. I don't even like to think about that. Shh. That's not good. It's one of the things I was...
I'm trying to think. It wouldn't be a mammogram because it's your testicle. It's not a mammary.
It'd be a testogram?
A testogram. Listen. Testogram.
That sounds like something I've sent someone on my phone.
You testogram know, for your face.
Now that you have shit on my joke. I want a yes or no answer to this question.
Okay.
Was the image of my testicles being smashed between two pieces of glass brought to your mind when I said mammogram of my testicles?
Well, yeah.
There you go. Joke succeeded, even though you shit on it.
I know he's like Donnie Darko in the scene about the Smurfs. They don't even have genitalia. It's just so illogical. Damn, Donnie, why you gotta get all smart on us?
Oh, we discussed yesterday during the Weedsman that Aaron would be, if the Player Haters Club did exist, Aaron would be a charter member.
Of the Player Haters?
Yeah. Just go around hating on everything. Said, we have found the music snob that is music snobbier than me.
It's true.
Yeah, I know. I was so reminded of a conversation we had about Johnny Cash the other day. Mm-hmm. His son was on NPR and they were talking to him.
Yeah, I heard. I didn't get to hear the whole thing because I was at work. But yeah, I heard a good portion of it.
I caught a great interview. I think I caught about halfway and into the end.
Yeah.
Because that's when I was on the road.
I think I caught the first half, so maybe we can piece it together.
Well, one of the things that they asked him is, the interviewer asked John Carter Cash was, so your father.
It was Terry Gross, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Q, wasn't it? Wasn't that the
program? No, it wasn't Terry Gross. You're right. It was on Q. Yeah.
I can't remember the interviewer's name, but he asked me, he said, so how did, you know, different producers handle your father? And he goes, you didn't produce Dad. Dad walked in and he said, I do what I do. And a good producer would take the recordings of it, would be more of an editor than a producer.
Right.
And he said, that's how come he loves the American recording so much, because Rick Rubin came in and just, I'm going to let you do your thing. You pick the songs. It's how come there were so many old, you know, gospel or religious songs he did.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, well, here, try this song. And I'm pretty sure Johnny Cash was like, who's Soundgarden? You know, I mean, I doubt he was like, let me do Rusty Chain. I want to do Personal Jesus. I like them boys in Depeche Mode. You know, I just don't see him doing that. So,
yeah. What's his name? The producer on those sessions.
Rick Rubin.
Yeah, thank you. Rick Rubin. Yeah, Rick Rubin was definitely feeding him songs that he thought that he would enjoy and be able to interpret well.
Exactly. Because Personal Jesus to Johnny Cash meant something way different than what it meant to when Depeche Mode did it.
Yeah.
Same thing with One, and same thing with Hurt, really. I mean, even Trent Reznor's like, that's not even my song anymore. That's his song. I do my version of it now. It's like Hendrix and All Along the Watchtower. Dylan was like, that's a Hendrix song. I do my version. And even to this day, Dylan still now sometimes pulls out Hendrix's version of All Along the Watchtower. So
I really only enjoy the Rusty Cage cover. I think that one's cool.
You wired me awake and hit me
and,
with the hand of broken nail.
The rest of them are just blah. They just don't do anything for me.
See, that's what I'm saying, but I remember our conversation where you said that, and I'm thinking it's kind of ironic you say that, because John Carter Cash said that's pretty much Dad as raw as you could get Dad. That was what Dad wanted to do without Nashville producers coming in going, well, we have to do this, and we have to have strings here, and we have to have a steel guitar here, and it's what's expected of you, John. You got to do this, you know?
Right. I guess I actually just really do like the old country aesthetic, like sound.
No, I got you. Sunday Morning Coming Down is one of my favorite songs.
Yeah.
And that's when he did it on the Johnny Cash Show. It was full on late 60s. All that, you know, stuff that they had. I mean, the only thing he didn't have is a sequin fucking blue suit on, you know, because he's the man in black. So he saw enough in the future to go, that's not going to age well as an image. You go ahead with that. Well, it's kind of like same thing with Waylon Jennings and stuff. I mean, those are guys that I think they're identified with country, but I don't even think they would. I don't even classify them as country. Country to me is George Jones.
Right.
You know? Yeah. I think certain artists transcend whatever genre they came out of. And really, Johnny Cash came out of rockabilly. A lot of his early stuff had a strong rockabilly vibe to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, sorry, I didn't mean to get off on that tangent. I heard that article, I heard the interview, and as I'm listening to it driving, I'm going, damn, I need to call Aaron and tell him to turn in the radio right now.
No, I heard the first part of that interview, but I did not hear that part. But I don't doubt it. I know for a fact. I've heard interviews with Johnny Cash where he talks about how much he loved those recordings.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, there are some great recordings, but they are not my favorite. None of those songs are my favorite Johnny Cash recordings.
Yeah. Well, since I appear to be the segue king, and we're on the music industry, what about that Paul Stanley article about the file sharing has taken the ability for a young artist to get to the pot of gold?
Right.
Fuck you, Paul Stanley. It leveled the playing field. That's what I...
Well, hold on, because I want to bring it up, because I want to quote him exactly. Yeah, what show is he on?
I don't know if it was a show. I know there was an article about the show he was on.
He was on... he's on Joe Rogan's show.
Is that... Yeah, he said that on Joe Rogan, but I think it was a blabbermouth.net or something like that article.
Well, they were talking about his appearance. It was during an appearance of the Joe Rogan Experience. Stanley was asked what Kiss's chances of success would be like if the band was starting out today. He replied, "We'd be fucked." In plain English, because the music industry as it exists today is not even an industry.
They don't even have a panty room.
It's just shambles. And now artists are in a position to have to take what the public, so to speak, is willing to give them.
Yeah, and he said something about, why should I have to take 50 cents instead of the full dollar? And he went,
because you signed a contract with the label, you idiot.
Yeah,
exactly. And you were lucky if you got 50 cents.
Yeah,
what the fuck are you talking about?
Michael Jackson.
What portion of that dollar were you getting?
Michael Jackson got, 20 cents a dollar on his albums? And it was considered like... Oh my God, that's insane that he gets that much per dollar on the sale of his album.
Yeah.
We'd have missed out on gems like this. I think I'd be okay with that.
See, I have to say, Kiss, never really cared for him.
Nope.
I can count on one hand how many songs I actually would not turn off if they come on the radio, but they're songs you never hear on the radio.
Yeah.
So in other words, every time I hear Kiss, I just go click. I'm good. I don't care.
Yeah.
Don't want to hear Beth.
They never play Shock Me. That's like one of the best Kiss songs, in my opinion.
I'm trying to think of the one, I think it's called She. A buddy of mine played it for years and years.
Strutter is one of the best.
I kind of hear Strutter sometimes.
Every once in a while, but...
Strutter!
Yeah, you just did the Kiss catalog right there.
Now here's, I have a friend he's a musician, loves Kiss, hates the Beatles.
Yeah. He's a fucking idiot.
I'm like, John, how do you even fucking rationalize this?
How do you sleep at night?
I can't fucking stand the Beatles. I don't like them. I'm like, what about Rolling Stone? Because usually you're a Beatles man or a Stones man if you have that strong of an opinion against one of the other.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I don't really like Stones either.
Yeah.
Well, how the fuck do you... I don't get it, dude. Gene Simmons would say, you don't know what you're talking
about.
This
person's musical taste is highly suspect.
Well, I love John. I was in a band with him
Kiss
for years.
Kiss made it okay to suck. That's like my big beef with him.
Okay, well, now that we've got...
Kiss made it okay to not learn your instrument. And to me, the makeup thing, too, says, look over here. We want you to detract from the fact that our music sucks. I mean, and it's... take a lot of shit for this one, but to me it's like bands like Slipknot, ICP. Look, we're trying to detract from something. If you are dressing up Marilyn Manson, Alice Cooper, you know.
Are you telling me that you don't think we're fucking these hoes that look like Spol Na Na Na? It's not like the imagine of our generation.
That's so funny that you go right to that lyric. The last band we were in, we covered an ICP song, and it was that song.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
Really?
Yeah, we did.
You did?
I think we covered that fucking song.
Isn't the whole song about having...
My nuts.
Yeah, having... Yeah. Having crabs. Yeah.
I can't believe you pulled that line out.
I know.
Like, struck something in me. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute.
Okay, so now that we've gotten the fact that we're not huge Kiss fans out of the way, I just want to say for me, that does not affect how I feel about his opinion about what he said. Well, I just disagree with what he said, and it's easier to pile on and dogpile him because of who he is. So
yeah, but why is it that we only hear this type of shit out of artists who have already made their wad on their shit? If Paul Stanley's still making anything out of music, he should consider himself lucky. What the fuck has he done? And even the few select songs that we could pull out as being worthy of a second or third listen are decades old. What has he done lately?
Their last hit that charted in the top 100 was Forever, and that came out in 1990.
Yeah.
I remember that
piece of shit.
That is a quarter of a decade ago. You are no longer relevant except for people who want to go and buy your merchandise and clap along to all the same songs and see you recreate Kiss Alive 1 and 2
fucking stage. I saw Marilyn Manson a few years ago. I was like, this motherfucker better open and close with the beautiful people. You know, like...
Oh, wait. Come on now. There's room for Lunchbox. That should be his closer.
But he basically...
Yeah, so he can open with the beautiful people and close with Sweet Dreams. Yeah, I figured that's right. All right. Anyway.
This band continued to make a killing, though, for another decade and a half just off of merchandise, and then decided that that wasn't going to cut it enough, so they decided to put the makeup back on and then get into reality television and all that other bullshit. And anyway, you don't hear this type of shit out of the bands who are actually trying to make it.
The bands were grinding it out, touring, making a living playing music, not being...
Yeah.
Multi-millionaires, and that was theirs. Okay, it's the difference between a musician and a businessman, and we were talking about it earlier. Kiss are excellent at business, and Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley are.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure Ace is only good at drinking and playing the same pentatonic lick over and over and over and over and over. But which I'm guilty of, so I can't say much. But are we really?
There you go. There's your boy right there.
Right.
No, this is well after they got rid of Ace. Wasn't this in fucking Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey?
Yeah, it was at the end after they went to guitar camp.
Yeah, okay, all right. I knew I'd recognize this from somewhere else. Anyways, like I said, I have a friend. She now works for Live Nation. And something that happened the other day that blew my mind is...
Were you going to have to pay money because you said that?
No, fuck that. Live Nation don't listen to us. And if they do, they'd come down here and be like, go smoke some weed. Because most of the guys that work there are like that. You didn't hear it from me. Anyways, St. Andrew's Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Better than Ezra. No, excuse me. Not even St. Andrew's Hall. The Fillmore. What used to be the State. Better than Ezra played there. That shit sold out in a day and a half. And she went to the show and she's like, I'm not even a big fan, but you know what? They put on a good show. It was an honest show. They met with people after the show. And these are guys who haven't had a hit in fucking going on 20 years, but they're still making a living playing, and they can sell out a 2,000-seat theater. And besides desperately wanting or good, name me a better than Ezra song.
Good.
That's the thing. But she said, you know what? Yeah. I'm sitting there, and I listened for their set was roughly about an hour to an hour and 15 minutes. And she goes, I only didn't recognize two or three songs. To me, that's a band that's out there disproving what he's saying. They're making a living. I'm pretty sure they're living comfortably. I'm pretty sure they weren't in an Econo line going and pulling in to the State to play their show.
Right. Well, look at somebody. Okay. Wilco is a perfect example of somebody who... This is a band who kind of went through the system and actually came out the other end better for it and started doing things on their own terms. This is a band that tours pretty consistently.
Yeah.
And even when Wilco isn't out, Jeff Tweedy's out doing dates across the country and internationally on his own. I mean, this is a working man's band. And they've built a following with very limited... like college radio airplay and have comfortable livings, I'm sure.
Yes.
You know? I'm not saying that, you know, anybody is in Wilco is ready to retire just yet or, you know, is getting like filthy rich off of this shit. I have no idea what their compensation looks like, but I know that he's at least paying the bills and he's not worried about shit.
Oh, his hands are meeting like a motherfucker, yeah.
And he can just concentrate on making music, and that's great. That's where we want our artists to be.
Yes.
At that level.
But he can get a blowjob from a different woman in each city. That's a sign of success.
But There was an article that I read a couple of years ago, I think it's been now, with Jeff Tweedy, where he was talking about file sharing, and he's like, look, I just look at it as like a library. You can go and check out all these great works of art, all these great novels and poems and short stories for free. You can take it home and read the whole thing as many times over and over again, but there's certain authors that you will just go out and buy those books.
Yes.
Owning it is a different thing. Being part of the experience.
Yep.
It's like, I've pirated just about everything.
No, I got
can you. Out there, right? Oh, yeah. And I went through a period where when I couldn't afford comic books, I would pirate them so I could keep up with them. But it just is not the same thing. Part of that experience is owning the actual product, not just getting the information out of it.
Yep.
You can get the experience out of it, and that's fine. And you used to be able to rent music and videos from the library, too.
Mm-hmm.
There's no big... Nobody was, like, up in arms about that either.
What is the big difference between... We all did this. One of your friends or you got an album. And then your friends or you... Who wants it? Bring me a tape.
Yep.
You know? And you'd fucking make... And then you'd just copy it for your friend and bring it to him the next day.
That's the thing. There was uproar about that the same way there is with file sharing now. And that's why nobody was really taking any of these industries seriously about file sharing, is because every new piece of technology that would make it that much easier to copy that media and distribute it was going to be the death of the industry.
Well, also,
and it never was.
Here's the thing. In analog, you have generational loss. Digital, you do not, or at least it's so minuscule.
So eventually, there's certain
advances. A copy of a copy is not going to be the same. You're going to go, oh, fuck, I can barely hear this, you know?
Right. That's what I'm saying, is there was advances that made it easier to distribute it, and this is just one more advance in that. And now, at this point, you can say, well, file sharing has affected the music industry more than any of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what are you including under that umbrella of the music industry?
Well, I think I got what you're saying, because this is how I feel about file sharing. This is how I felt since the beginning. When I first got turned onto a high-speed internet connection in Napster,
mm-hmm.
like, and it was Napster, the original, not the shit that it turned into.
You're talking about Lars Ulrich suing Sean Fanning.
Before he even fucking... Well, okay, Lars probably even knew what Napster was.
But let me finish my point first, though. When you think about it, like, okay, file sharing has affected the industry, but it depends on who you're putting underneath that umbrella of the industry. And really, the industry, like many industries have, you see these industries go through bubbles and they burst.
Yep.
It's kind of the same thing that happened with the music industry, just very slowly over decades. And now that bubble is bursting. But what you have taking its place are all these small businesses. You have, you know, a group that gets a following from the recordings that they put out, that they make, you know, on their own terms in their basement or in a friend's studio, or scrounging up enough money to go into a small studio and record it, touring like crazy, getting a following based on that, and they decide they want to start releasing their own stuff. They're just going to do it on their own label. And then that takes off, and then you have other bands that they can release through their label. Mm. Now they are a small business owner. They are now part of the music industry. The music industry isn't dying. It isn't dwindling.
It's transitioning.
It's growing. It's just we can't track it the same way. It's not just looking at like what Sony and Arista and whoever else, whatever major label out there is doing.
See, I that's right.
I look at it.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I look at it as I started saying this earlier and I cut myself off, is I do not feel bad for the music industry, because it's going through the same thing radio went through, started going through 10 years ago, and is definitely gone through in about the last 5 years. It saw it coming. It thought it was too arrogant and too big to fail. Oh, it won't affect us. Well, guess what? It has. It's leveled the playing field for everybody, you know, and it's taken away the gatekeepers. There is no longer, you know, program directors and record executives are no longer standing in the way of hundreds of thousands of people, of ears hearing your band and eyeballs seeing your band's name. It's no longer the case. They're no longer in the way of that now. So it's opened up the floodgates, so to speak. We need a bell for every time we use a cliche. like radio, it should have, it saw this coming, and instead of embracing it and getting out ahead of it, it said, nah, fuck it. It'll go away, just like dubbing tapes did, just like, you know.
Ripping a CD and burning a copy.
Yeah, but guess what? This can't go away, because it's unless... You know, and I see it coming. FCC is going to get involved in the internet really soon.
I don't know if I completely agree with that, because they were very much up in arms about every form of media that allowed you to copy it in some fashion.
They were about reel-to-reel back in the day.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't so much that they thought they were impervious to it. They were very fearful of it as something that could affect their bottom line.
But I think after the 10th thing that didn't kill their business, they got a little arrogant about it. Cocky. And went, whatever. Yeah.
No, I don't think so. What it really comes down to, if they were coming at this wisely, though, is understand that you're not going to be able to control the way people want to use technology. And instead of playing into that, they're fighting it. So that's why the smaller labels the independent groups are actually being successful, because they're using this technology to distribute their stuff. They're giving away music, knowing that it will promote sales, not only of their back catalog, but of that music that they're giving away. I bet you that even though everybody got that U2 album that had an iPhone, I bet you that album sold a shit ton. And more so than it would have, they didn't give everybody who had an iPhone a free copy of it.
Well, every cloud it was pushed into counted as a sale. I don't know if we ever covered that.
Yeah, we did, because we brought up how when Prince released Musicology, he packaged the price of a CD into a ticket for that tour. And so people didn't think about it as, I'm paying to see Prince and a copy of his new album. They just showed up at the door and they said, here's Prince's new album. They're like, oh, cool, CD, whatever, now play Purple Rain.
But, yeah, but
that's how come he blew up SoundScan and he was the best-selling artist of that year.
Well, these are dying numbers to these references that we have for what a good... Yeah. Prominent piece of music is that it sells a certain amount of copies that's going to become...
I got you, and hold that thought, because I want to come back to that, because it's kind of something we brought up earlier. My thing with file sharing, and this is where I think the record industry got greedy and didn't realize that there is a limit to the bullshit that fans will put up with. I'm a huge Jimi Hendrix fan. Yep. I've owned vinyl. Obviously, I didn't buy it brand new. Wasn't around back then. I've owned 8 tracks of his stuff. I've owned cassettes and replaced the cassettes multiple times over the years. CDs, and whether they got stolen, lost, whatever, mm-hmm. broke, scratched, bought them over and over again. And now, you know, file sharing come out, and I was like, oh, fuck, I can go on Napster and get the bootleg that I had to hunt down, or get something that's out of print that I literally had to scour record stores for.
They only have to wait 5 days for it to download.
Well, yeah, I think we've had this conversation. Out of print is now a thing of the past.
Exactly. And here's what pisses me off is that they go, okay, well, fine. You want your music digitally? Here's a digital download. Fuck you. I'm not paying $1 a fucking song for something I've paid for 6-7 times over. How much of my fucking money does his sister need? Seriously. I mean, I'm not even joking. I made the mistake of going to a Jimi Hendrix website when I was fairly new to the internet, and I signed up for their newsletter, which was basically a slick way of saying, we're going to send you a catalog every 3 months. So you got a quarterly catalog.
Yeah.
There were Jimi Hendrix toilet seats.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, he's rolling over in his grave. He would be like, this is not what the fuck I spent all those years sweating over a guitar for.
Yeah.
It's for my sister to get rich off of someone sitting on my fucking face, literally.
The people control.
I don't know the last time you've paid for a digital download, but they have come a long way. Like, it's yours forever now. Everything I've ever bought, like, since I gave myself an iTunes account, is available to me.
Okay, but what I'm getting at is that, okay, so they didn't offer anything new. It was just a repackaged shit in a new fucking format. And then I bought it and I bought it and I bought it. And I got tired of buying the same fucking thing. Then they were like, well, you can buy it digitally. You can own it forever. Well, I don't want to fucking pay for it again. I'm sorry. I've paid. Why should I have to pay over my lifetime upwards of $100 for Access Bold as Love? Yeah. Is it a good album?
Well, I mean,
in my opinion, it is. Is it worth $100 fucking dollars and have to replace it constantly? No.
Now you got Pirate Bay, which is full of like-minded individuals like yourself.
I understand. But here's my beef is that then you had people going, well, it's killing our industry. No, it's killing Eddie Kramer's back end on the fucking album. That's what it's fucking killing. Well, Hendrix is dead.
Yeah, it's not stopping the art. I'll give you agree. The art's still out there perpetuating.
Another
correct.
Thing, you mentioned the idea of the being out of print is obsolete now. It's an obsolete thought because somebody will copy it.
If there's
and throw
one
it up
copy
somewhere.
Of it out there and someone's got the right. internet, it's going to be out there if you want it.
That was definitely my first thought. I mean, as a like huge music fan and having certain artists that I'm really into that you will just listen to anything, you know, whether it's a demo recording or some crappy live
yes,
recording.
Yes.
And that's the first thing. Like my friend and I both had very similar tastes, and that's the first thing we thought of is like, oh my God, we can get like I remember the first two things that I downloaded from Napster was a collection of the Jeff Buckley demos.
Yeah, and they released it as a live album eventually, but it was like him yeah. in front of 10 people
he
on
does,
a Tuesday night.
He does
or something.
That fucking he does that Bob Dylan song. I'm trying to remember the title of it. It's like one of my favorites. And a collection of live Built to Spill recordings that were just like fan recordings in the crowd. So I'm not trying to say this as like a defense of like, hey, I wasn't taking any money out of anyone's pocket, but yeah, that as a music fan, that's immediately the first benefit I thought I saw is like getting my hands on stuff that I couldn't before. Or I'd have to like search, like track down and pay like $35. And who's that $35 going to? Well, 20 of it is going to some hack that, you know, found it and mass produced it with yep. some shitty, you know, photocopied jacket. And the rest of the 15 is going to the record store that's selling it illegally.
And on top of that, if the record store was really shady, because I found a few that weren't, I could go in and go, before I spend that much money on that bootleg, I want to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they didn't have an open copy, they'd go over to the shelf, whoosh, slit it open, and go, there you go.
Yeah.
No, they stood behind their product.
A lot of the places that I went to, the bootlegs were in the locking case things,
yep.
yeah. and they were shrink-wrapped. And there was like explicitly no returns.
Well, no, there was a no return policy, but the bootleg VHS,
yeah.
like pro shot, you know, amateur, whatever, board recordings or, you know, someone in the audience, it didn't matter. You can listen to it, you can watch it because we want you to come back because we have quality mm-hmm. product. We stand behind it. And that, yes, when I first discovered Napster, found a whole world of alternate recordings to albums that I loved, alternate mixes, masters or whatever, that I didn't even know existed.
Yeah.
And my other point is, and this is where I think I fall in line with, even though I am a musician, I fall in line with most people who aren't. If I hear something I like and I download it for free and I really like it, I'll go out and buy the physical copy.
Yeah.
Like you said.
Yeah, exactly.
It's being part of the experience.
Right. And most of my collection on my computer is just a digitized version of my vinyl collection.
Exactly. Exactly.
I considered actually, well, I have a sound card that I can hook up and I just need to get a decent turntable again and one that would be good enough sound quality to go through the trouble of actually archiving all this, or somebody's already done it for me. And I can just download it.
Yep.
Am I doing something wrong? I mean, technically, yes. I'm pirating music. But I am simply, it's just a shortcut to what I could do with what I've already purchased and what I can legally do. It's not illegal for me to take that album and digitize it and put it on my hard drive and on my iPod and listen to it however I want on my own terms.
As long as you're the one listening to it and you're not distributing it to someone else for a profit or for no profit. Because that's how right. I've heard it phrased. I get what you're saying and I understand it. I just don't necessarily agree. I don't think it's wrong that if I own a vinyl copy of Electric Ladyland, like the original one with the naked women on it, that you have to pay money, I mean big money if you want that copy.
Yeah.
And I own a DVD of the making of that and a CD. If I go download the album off of Pirate Bay, yeah. well, you just, oh, that's horrible. You're depriving people of money. Fuck that.
Well, whoever the fuck is controlling the Hendrix estate anyways is doing a piss poor job.
His sister.
That's what
I said. How much more money does Jamie Hendrix need?
The fact that you can get any article of clothing or anything for your house with his name and signature on it and they do what I hear is a fantastic biopic of, like, not a, I don't know if you call it a biopic, because it's just like one segment of Jimi Hendrix's life that's played by Andre Benjamin.
Yeah.
And they can't get any of the music.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
can't get any fucking Hendrix
music. By the
music.
Way, that's the second attempt at a Hendrix biography movie that that happened to.
Yeah.
But the first one was a Showtime.
I think it changed his name to Jeremy Hendrix.
The first one was a Showtime movie, so I understood it, and I'm like, wait a minute, his own family's fucking putting this out, and they put their thumbs up
Hendrix.
On it. And yeah, oh no.
Sorry.
A little early in the night still. That's my go to sleep medicine. I'll be over here.
I tried to pass it to both of them.
But I totally agree. It's ridiculous. But at the same time, her controlling the Hendrix estate, one of my favorite Hendrix albums is Band of Gypsies.
Yeah.
And
that's why you have the golf club cozies.
Well, no. there's
the Band of Gypsies golf club cozies.
She started their own record label for quality bootlegs, quality live shows. And there's something called Rehearsal at Bagley's, which was where Jimi Hendrix, Billy Cox, and Buddy Miles got together, and they rehearsed every song they played on Band of Gypsies, and even some they didn't play. And their studio quality recordings, I'll pay $20 for that, because I want to hear the different takes on those songs. That's a good idea in my mind.
Yeah.
But that's just me, you know, as a huge fan.
And, I mean, there's different levels to that. The BBC recordings of the Led Zeppelin, the two discs set that came out, some of those tastes are just fucking fantastic.
Oh yeah.
And that is a really good listen. And especially because the originals have just been drilled into my brain, and sometimes, you know, after hearing it so many times, you're just like, at least I'm hearing a different version of it.
And the Hendrix one had Paul McCartney on backing vocals, uncredited.
Yeah.
And I never heard that until it came out. And I was like, that sounds really familiar. That voice sounds really familiar in the background. And I know that's not Noel Redding, you know?
But speaking of Paul McCartney, though, that's where I was going next. The Beatles. What was that collection called where they had like the two disc set of like there was multiple versions of it across their career of all the demo recordings that they put up, that they had in the can.
I know what you're talking about, because I have a friend who's a huge Beatles fan, and he has it, but I can't remember off the top of my head.
And I mean, that's like kind of ridiculous. It's like, you know, just little ideas of songs. And I guess, you know, it was a little bit interesting, as almost like you feel like a music historian or something, listening to it and kind of breaking down, you know, some of these songs. But it's like, I'm never going to go back and listen to that shit again.
See,
that's
the person
just like
you're
way
about.
Too much shit.
But it's only about certain artists. I can listen to Hendrix demos of him with a 4-track.
Yeah.
Yeah, all day. And then I can listen to John Frusciante's different versions of his albums that he's put out over the years all day. Could I do it with... I don't think it'd be the same with someone like Tool. You know what I'm saying? Do you really want to hear Tool write a song? I mean, I imagine that's a pretty tedious process, and I don't know how much I'm going to listen to it and go, oh, okay, you know, I get that, and I see where he was going, or where they were going with that. But then again, that's just me, dude. I'm huge Hendrix fan, huge John Frusciante fan, so I will do that.
I guess I'm much more into the idea of a live take than the demo recordings. I guess I did kind of describe two different things. Like, the Led Zeppelin is like, they got in the studio at BBC Radio and did those songs live.
Yeah.
And apparently with no overdubs, although, I mean, that's... they say, like, all the John Peel sessions are live as well, but there's a lot of those that they went back and, like,
little touch-ups here and there.
There's a lot of that, I'm sure.
But
I'm much more a fan of, live recordings like that than just hearing what I ultimately just think of as the inferior version of the song. Like, they made this crappy version, which then eventually came the good version that they decided to release.
I understand.
You rub the glitter off the artist, you don't find like gold underneath.
Maybe some fool's gold. You know, you're like, oh, it looks pretty. Like look at it. I'm going to buy the CD. And you get home and you're like, this is shit. This is him on the toilet singing into a fucking handheld tape recorder.
The more you peel the onion back, you're just going to... It's almost like taking away from the magic of the artist. You know, they go through all these hours and learning their craft to create something, this end result that... whether it's a result of, you know, hours of practice or just hours in the studio, you know, there is this finished product that they're working towards. The sculptor doesn't, he unveils his piece, right? He doesn't go out into the public square with a block and carve away so that everybody can go, it doesn't even look like a human yet. Who's that supposed to be? Is that Abraham Lincoln? No way, let me guess. You know, there's the idea of, like, you know, I can understand wanting to know a little bit about the process, trying to get inside of the artist's mind, but seeing the rough drafts of things, I don't think that provides you insight. That kind of just tarnishes.
I guess that's my, like, I'm assuming I'm on the Asperger's, you know, spectrum at some point about certain things. And
I think we've all made those assumptions about ourselves.
You know, and certain musicians, certain authors, certain directors, you know, like, I am like that. Darren Aronofsky, I'm like that about. I would watch one of his student films.
Okay.
Even if no one else wanted to.
Is it because you feel like the more material you ingest of that artist, the deeper understanding you have of this artist? Or is it maybe, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but more of like a collector mentality? Like, if I'm into a certain book or an author, you know, I want to have all their books. I've read every Kurt Vonnegut book. I've read every Charles Bukowski book. I've read every... anyway,
I get you. I know. I get you.
Irving Welsh.
Yeah.
Everything that they put out, I've read.
It's kind of a mixture of both for me.
Yeah.
Hubert Selby, I really like. Read everything he's
put out. Bukowski was the other one I was going to name drop that I've read all of.
Well, no, you did. You did. You did.
Oh, no. Okay, never mind.
But no, Hubert Selby is an artist, or is an artist, is an author that it's not like there's a lot of other stuff out there besides the books he put out before he died.
Yeah.
And his writing was so idiosyncratic that either people liked it or it turned them off. Mm-hmm. But once I read one book of his, I had to go out and find everything I could of his. So, I mean, short story collections, you know, whatever. And I guess Hunter S. Thompson, for some people, is like that. They'll track down a fucking essay he wrote as a one-off for a golf magazine.
Yeah, I read a number, but he's got a lot of material out there.
There's a book of just his letters to people, because it's so entertaining to read, because the way he wrote a letter was not like most people would write a letter, you know, to whom it may concern. Like, he'd be like, you filthy pig, blah, 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 you dirty little cocksucker, you know? And meanwhile, it's a letter to his mom, you know, or some shit, you know? I got what you're saying, but to me, it's also, if I really...
You bastard, I got that fruitcake.
Yeah.
You're supposed to eat that shit?
For me, it's at a certain point, once I've heard all the top layer of a musician or the top layer of an artist, mm-hmm. that I like, I want to dig deeper, because yes, it does give me an understanding of it, but it's also just my nature. If I'm that interested in something, I don't just listen to it, I fucking study it.
Yeah.
I mean, I can pick it apart. And it's like the Funkadelic song Maggot Brain. That solo is awesome. And I read something that made me go, oh, okay, I totally understand that. George Clinton went to Eddie Hazel and said, okay, we need you to solo for like 8 minutes on this song. And he's like, fuck, how am I going to fucking solo for 8 minutes? He goes, play like your mom just died. Turn around, walked away, and turned on the fucking... Go. There's your take. One take. Mother boom. Solo done. For the third, you know, it's just shit like that. It to me, as a musician, I don't see how that's not something a musician would be interested in knowing. I mean, are we taking building like Lego blocks and saying, okay, first chorus, bridge, chorus, okay, we've made a song? Or are we going, how did these people approach their craft differently than I do, and what can I learn from it?
Yeah,
that's what I'm getting at.
There is a part of that.
But I mean, that's just an artist I really am obsessive with. Love Stevie Ray Vaughan. Not a whole lot of point to listening to a lot of Stevie Ray Vaughan's outtakes. It's pretty much all the same.
Yeah.
I mean, I love him, but it's Stevie Ray Vaughan no matter what he does. He's not trying new things. He's not messing around with a synthesizer and a harmonizer back in the 60s like Hendrix was.
Right.
You know, doing shit like that. So,
whereas, like, I'll listen to just about, well, maybe not everything that Miles Davis put out in his career, but certainly there's a more material that they're finding to release.
Oh yeah,
you know, like one of my favorites is the live session with him and piano player. What the fuck's his name? Thelonious Monk.
Okay, yeah.
But you know, in those demos or the alternate takes, the music is actually going different places.
Kind of Blue, there's a whole alternate take version of that album.
Yeah.
Or alternate takes version of that album.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, just by listening to the first 30 seconds of most of those songs, if that come off the official release or one of those.
Yeah.
So I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I've jazz. Got the, I've jazz got the Bitches to... Brew box set that's got all the alternate takes from those sessions.
Gotcha.
I love that shit.
All right, so now that we've de-evolved to episode 8, Radio for 3.
Now, standard guitar tuning is not going to be drop D. It'll probably sound like this. Now, this is going to be hard to explain, so you're
almost.
Basically just going to have to borrow okay. by
not
the
quite.
Whatever. Practice, but you're going to want to drop
how
it.
How to impress
D,
women with the guitar.
Friends, what that means, but essentially get it to sound like from this down to D, which is this.
He's going to show you how to one finger it, dude.
And,
he's going to show you how to flog the shit out of that.
Wait.
Just know how to take a guitar and drop it to D. That's step one, and you might have to.
Vince, you're not impressing me to impress women.
How do you start
D,
with, like, learn how to tune it to drop D?
One finger chord.
No, 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 but I mean, you're, the person like, does not know how to play a guitar.
Yeah.
So they're like, what the fuck's a D?
And I'll give you an example of that. Notice I'm not really going to play anything, but it's going to I'm going to look real. Like if you just look off in the distance and,
what?
And then like shake your head or something, then you really know, you look like you know what you're doing. So just watch what I'm
wow.
actually doing, but then watch what I'm fake doing. So here we go.
I'd like to point out there are no women in next to him in this video.
Throw some emotion in it, bud. Do the guitar face.
I don't know many people that would be impressed by this. Are you fucking serious?
At least tune into Dadgad. That way, you know, you have somewhat of a chord when you strum the whole thing.
Right.
It's just dissonant at that point.
And you just play bar chords, essentially, which is just...
Bar chords.
You're playing them bar chords.
Which reminds me...
You'd be banging
it's almost midnight. I gotta get out.
It's the northern guy. Peace in the Middle East. Yeah. Oh boy.
What the I don't know what this guy is on. So
that's an associate's nigga.
So this
what
guy.
What do you do with an associate's degree?
Wait a minute.
Substitute
how
teach retarded kids.
How was the title of the video? Is how to impress women with the guitar.
Guitar.
How to not play guitar. So
that's the subtitle. It's in parentheses.
So his YouTube site is not about. It's not guitar related. It's how to impress women.
Well, I'd like to point out there's
right?
no.
What's
woman
his other videos?
Next to him.
What are his other videos? It's not continuing on his education of the guitar, right? It's like how to grow a sick ass beard.
It's wicked hot, but it's easy once you get to use. You just tune it down to D and then grow it out.
So how this to get is the your, fun part of hating.
How to get your tight ass pants on.
When you zip them up, you got to get a wire first, coat hanger, stick it through the loop in your belt and in the zipper and pull it up. That's how you get them skin tight pants on.
A lot of people ask me, where you put your balls?
You dress left to right.
It's a little secret. I tuck them up the asshole.
It says, whoa, I'm a woman. I'm not impressed. And my ears are bleeding. And then some guy's saying he's being sarcastic if you haven't noticed. Like, I'm not sure if that guy is being fake or not.
I think he is. I don't know.
I think he's one of those guys that as long as he amuses himself, he's happy. It's like shit I say at work and people are like, what the fuck are you talking about? I just drop random movie lines and I amuse myself, so I don't care if you get it or not.
I think it is complete bullshit and he knows it, but it still works for him. Like he's done this and gotten laid. And so he's like, fuck it.
I get wicked
like,
mad pussy off this.
No, okay.
Just get wet over drop D, man.
Well, actually, this might actually be sealing the deal that this is him parodying.
A lot of guys will do the thing where you buy the motorcycle helmet, jacket, and just so they can tell chicks that they go to a motorcycle and seem like a badass, and that's how they get chicks. I don't know. That's what is this,
that episode
idea.
Of Friends? Who does this?
It's better to just get them really, really drunk, and then they'll think whatever car you have is really nice. And let me explain that a little bit.
I don't think you need to elaborate. I understand completely.
This guy is like my uncle that would show up annihilated at Thanksgiving and give me advice on how to pick up women.
I can't imagine myself going out on a date with a woman who cared what car I drove.
It's going to be an awkward situation.
That's why I don't date.
It's going to be a real deal. To explain away. But if, on the other hand, you get her really, really hammered, like with Jaeger bombs and some martinis.
Anyone listening to this is picturing what this guy looks like, and
if
they're
you get
wrong.
Really drunk,
right?
Then she'll take whatever.
Full beard, one of those newsboy caps.
And what I like to
jeans
do
aren't
is,
that tight.
They fit him.
Yeah, they fit him.
He's not that hipster. He's the Portland looking hipster.
You just go, it's a little bit less roomy than you would think, wouldn't it? And then she's just like, yeah, it's great. But so that's a lot better than the motorcycle thing. So that's the Vince's tip of the day. And
his accent's kind of.
Oh man, I talked right over his tip. What?
Get him drunk, basically. And then get him in your car and he'll think it's awesome. Yeah.
That was it. He had
nothing pontificated else. Upon that, apparently, for the next 30 seconds.
Okay, so we found out it's fake. All right, well, it's a bit. I shouldn't say it's fake. It's a bit. Oh, a couple other things were funny. Hey, guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks for clicking. Thanks for liking. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for subscribing for free by clicking through the iTunes banner on ChristopherMedia.net. Thank you for telling a friend. I probably already said that, but that's how important it is because that's how podcasts work. We drop every Monday and Thursday. Check out all of the other shows on ChristopherMedia.net. So stay tuned. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you next time.
If you enjoy this show and want more people to know about it, head on over to iTunes, leave a comment, and rate it 5 stars. Make sure you like and share us on Facebook, and don't forget to follow us on Twitter. Just search for Christopher Media. Thank you in advance for supporting Christopher Media by clicking on the PayPal button and by clicking through to all the sponsors who support ChristopherMedia.net. Most importantly, we would like to take the time to extend an extra special thanks to you. Christopher Media could not exist without your support. Thank you for visiting ChristopherMedia.net, and thank you for listening. Christopher Media. Let's make some noise.